Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 11, Text 18. Bhagavan Bala Shabdatam
Lina
Kamadam Utpahan
Lina Kamadam Utpahan
Daman Yasasha Bhagavan
Sadam Yasasha Bhagavan
Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead. Bhagashabda,
of the word.
Bhagartham, the meaning, namely opulence. Lila Kamalam, his pastimes lotus. Udvahan, caring. Dharmam, religion. Yashaha, fame. Cha, and Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead. Chamara Vyajane, the pair of yak tail fans. Abhajat, has accepted. Translation. Playfully carrying a lotus which represents the various opulences designated by the word Bhaga, the Supreme Lord accepts service from a pair of Chamara fans, which are religion and fame. Text 19. Atapasaram tuvai kuntan dvijagamam kuto bahyam trividveda suparnakyo yajyam bahati purusham. O Brahmanas, the Lord's umbrella is his spiritual abode, Vaikuntha, where there is no fear, and Garuda, who carries the Lord of sacrifice, is the threefold Veda. Text 20.
Anapayane Bhagavati Sri Saksharatmano Hari Vishvakshena Stantramuti Vidita Prasadadipa Nandadaya Stodva Sastascha.
Translation. The goddess of fortune Sri, who never leaves the Lord's side, appears with him in this world as the representation of his internal potency. Vishvakshena, the chief among his personal associates, is known to be the personification of the Pancharatra and other tantras, and the Lord's eight doorkeepers, headed by Nanda, are his mystic perfections, beginning with anima. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the goddess of fortune is the original source of material opulence. It's the original source of all material opulence. Material nature is directly controlled by the Lord's inferior energy, Mahamaya, whereas the goddess of fortune is his internal superior energy. Still, the opulence of the Lord's inferior nature had its source in the supreme spiritual opulence of the goddess of fortune. As stated in Sri Hayasirsha Pancharatra, Paramatma Haridevas Tashchakti Sri Iholita, Sri Devi Prakati Prokta Keshiva Purusha Smita, Navishnuna Vina Devi Na Hari Parmajam Vina. The Supreme Soul is Lord Hari, and his potency is known in this world as Sri. Goddess Sri is known as Prakriti, and the Supreme Lord Keshava is known as the Purusha. This divine goddess is never present without him, nor does he ever appear without her. Also, Sri Vishnu Purana states, Nityaiva sa jagannamata Vishnu Sri Anapayini Yathara Sarvagata Vishnus Tateva Nyan Vijotamam. She is the eternal mother of the universe, the goddess of fortune of Lord Vishnu, and she is never separated from him. In the same way that Lord Vishnu is present everywhere, so is she, O best of the Brahmanas. Also in Vishnu Purana 1.9, text 114, Evam yatha jagat swami deva devo janadhana avataram karoti eva tatha shrita sahayini. Thus in the same way, the Lord of the universe, the God of gods, Janardhan, descends to this world. So his consort, the goddess of fortune, does also. The pure spiritual status of the goddess of fortune is described in the Skanda Purana. Aparam Traksharam Yasa Prakriti Jada Rupika Sri Para Prakriti Prakta Chaitana Vishnu Samshraya Tam Maksharam Param Prabhu Paratha Param Maksharam Hari Evakila Gunopi Akshara Trayam Iritam. The inferior infallible entity is that nature who manifests as the material world. The goddess of fortune, on the other hand, is known as the superior nature. She is pure consciousness and is under the direct shelter of Lord Vishnu. While she is said to be the superior infallible entity, that infallible entity who is greater than the greatest is Lord Hari himself, the original possessor of all transcendental qualities. In this way, three distinct infallible entities are described. Thus, although the inferior energy of the Lord is infallible in her function, her power to manifest temporary illusory opulences exists by the grace of the internal energy, the goddess of fortune, who is the personal consort of the Supreme Lord. The Padma Purana 256, text 9-12, lists 18 doorkeepers of the Lord: Nanda Sunanda Jai Vijay, Chanda Prachanda, Padra Subhadra, Datta Vidata, Kumula Kumudaksha, Pundariksha, Vamana, Sankukarna, Savanetra, Sumukha, and Supratisthita. Om Ajana Timirandasya Janandana Shalakaya Chakshu Om Nitanya Tasmaya Shri Guruve Namaha Nukam Guru Kivashram Pandaman Gayate Girin Yatki Pratamaham Vande Shri Guru Nijinatarinam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. So the title of the chapter is the summary description of the Mahapurusha. And throughout the week, we've been hearing and discussing how the Virat Rupa form is able to be conceived by divine vision or by the wonderful mercy or grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as we see with the initiation process of Lord Brahma, as we have seen in Bhagavad Gita with Arjuna himself, that in order to actually be able to envision not only the material form of the Lord in the form of the Virat Rupa, but also Krishna in his original form, in his Swayam Bhagavan form, requires qualification for the eyes. And this is awarded to the living entity by the mercy of the Lord once he sees that we have made a constant endeavor to achieve the perfection of life. So it's very significant here. These texts have been describing various limbs or different manifestations of the body of the Lord. And this can give us an indication that indeed the Lord has a form. He doesn't have a material form. The Supreme Lord has a spiritual form, but with his potencies, with his energies, he pervades the entire material and the spiritual world as the sustainer, as the maintainer. So Krishna does that through his potencies. He doesn't have to diminish himself in terms of his opulences. As it's explained in Bhagavad Gita and the Sri Upanishad, that although the Supreme Lord is here, he's there, he's everywhere, he walks, he doesn't walk, he sits, he doesn't sit, it does not mean that the Supreme Lord is without a form. These are all the various manifestations of Krishna's potencies. He can do anything and everything because he's the reservoir of all potencies. He's Purushottama, he's the supreme yogi. But in this verse specifically, we are hearing about the three energies of the Lord that are being explained in reference to Krishna being the greater than the greatest. So we know from our knowledge from the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna has his inferior and his superior energy. Now Krishna's superior energy, of course, is explained here as the goddess Shri, his internal energy. And we also understand that the living entities are Krishna's superior energy because they are part and parcel of Krishna. They are minute sparks stemming from Krishna himself. So in that way, the living entities who are situated as the marginal potency of the Lord are of a superior nature. And that superiority is temporarily lost when the living entity comes into contact with material nature and becomes covered in consciousness, thinking that they are matter, thinking that they are the body. So the inferior energy, however, the material nature, is there. It is described as having been dominated and controlled by the internal potency. So that Yogamaya potency, the original internal potency of the Lord, sustains and actually awards all these great opulences to the inferior energy. Towards the end of the purport, it's explaining how the ability of the inferior energy of the Lord to exhibit temporary opulences comes from the grace of the internal energy. So at any point, nor is the inferior energy, the material nature, or the superior energy, the living entities, not at any point are they independent of the Supreme Lord. So all these energies are actually dependent on Krishna's grace and Krishna's mercy to be able to fully exhibit and manifest their specified duties. So similarly, the material energy, in the cause of creation, we have the pradhan and the mahatattva, all the gross and subtle elements created. And it's only after the Lord glances over material nature, after the element of time and the three modes of material nature has been given, it's only after the Lord actually glances over that material energy that it then becomes to become active. Otherwise, it's in a state of inaction because the Supreme Lord Himself has not provided His mercy, has not cast His glance. So the material energy itself is dependent on the mercy of this powerful internal potency, the Supreme Lord Himself. What to speak of the marginal potency, we're supremely dependent on the Lord Himself for having a body to be able to execute our duties, our functions. The material nature working under Krishna's sanction is providing different bodies for different living entities who want to fulfill their so-called desires in this material world. Another point to also highlight from this purport is that whenever Krishna descends into this world, as we know from the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna descends at specific times and places to reveal his pastimes and to protect his devotees. Paritunaya sadhanam vinashaya chadukshitam. And also to re-establish the principles of religion, real religion, sanatana dharma, dharma samstapanataya sambhavani yuge yuge. He explains that he's coming in every yuga to explain this sanatana dharma, to give a process that will connect the living entity to the Supreme Soul, and in that way lead to the perfection of life. So Krishna comes in a specific way, but also when Krishna descends into this world, it's explaining that the Eternal Mother of the Universe also descends. And because this mother of the universe in this text is being explained through these statements from the Vishnu Purana and the Skanda Purana, it's explaining how she will only reside where the Supreme Lord also resides. So she's never independent, she's never by herself. The Supreme Goddess, she of course she's chaste to her Lord and Master Vishnu. So she cannot be independent, she cannot be by herself. So wherever the Lord goes, she also follows. So we cannot speak of Lakshmi without Narayan. It is not possible. It is not proper for Lakshmi to be without Narayan. That is the eternal relationship. Just as it is the eternal relationship for the living entity to be fully dependent on the Supreme Lord. It is not possible for the living entity to actually become happy separate from Krishna. So here it's speaking right from the top. In the material universe, in the creation, there is so much dependence on the Supreme Lord. Never is there a time where this powerful energy, the external energy, which we can have, we've had experience of the external energy, how it makes us forget, how it facilitates our happiness, it facilitates our distress as well in this material world. So we can never forget the potency of this external energy when we're in forgetfulness of Krishna. So at the same time, this energy is dependent on Krishna. It is never ever independent of Krishna because it gets its potency, all its opulences, all its ability to cover the living entity who are superior by nature, is coming from the Supreme Lord Himself. So even for the living entities, our lesson should be, well, if the Supreme, if this energy, if this external energy, although inferior, if it has so much potency coming from the Supreme Lord, and it's taking shelter of the Supreme Lord, everything it understands to be given by the Supreme Lord, then why should we think otherwise about ourselves? Then why should we think that we can be independent? If not only the inferior energy, but also the superior energy, Goddess Sri understands that I'm dependent on the Supreme Lord Vishnu. There is no scope of my independence. It is not possible for me to be independent of Krishna. So the living entities should also take stock of this mentality, this consciousness, this consciousness that I'm eternally dependent on the Supreme Lord. For every little thing, Krishna explains that He is the source of all material and spiritual worlds. If we understand this, then we will not lament. If we understand this, then we will not try to separate Krishna from everything. We cannot separate Krishna from the material energy because that is His potency. That is Krishna's energy. Although it's of an inferior nature, it is still coming from Krishna. So the value of this material world, anything that has existence in this material world, is because of Krishna. The material world has value because it is Krishna, indirectly. So when we see this, during the week we're discussing that, when we hear of Krishna's Rupa form or Krishna's universal form, we should be struck with wonder and understand that this Krishna is not a mere human being. No mere human being can manifest a gigantic form stemming from the lowest regions up to the highest region, containing everything in existence. This is not magic. This is not mysticism. This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we should also understand, no, He's not just a simple human being, that He's the cause of all causes. He shows that in that form, that everything is coming from Me, from the different planetary systems, the suns, the different devatas, the different potencies, all of these are coming from Krishna. So this we can be able to see in just Krishna's universal form. And that we understand from that universal form that as Krishna was revealing it to Arjuna, or as Krishna was revealing it to Lord Brahma, Krishna revealed his universal form, and at the same time he has revealed his Mahavishnu from whom all these other universes are coming. And he reveals his Narayan form, and then gradually he reveals his original two-arm feature to show that actually all incarnations are coming from Krishna. Krishna is not an incarnation. Krishna is the Supreme Lord himself. He's the original. All the other expansions of Krishna are from, you know, the different demigods, from the different Purusha avatars. They're coming from the original Krishna. Not that Krishna is coming from Narayan or Krishna is coming from Mahavishnu. No, everything is coming from Krishna. The different Puranas have been able to explain that. So in the Sri Upanishad, because from here, from studying these texts, we're hearing about how everything is coming from Krishna. And in the first mantra, Srila Prabhupada states that normally when people hear that Krishna is the source of everything or he's the controller, it means that Krishna either has no form or his form diminishes. Because we still have a materialistic conception, we're using a material mind to try and understand the absolute truth without proper purification. So it seems difficult that someone can be all-pervading and still have one potent form. So if someone is diminishing, or if you take a block of, I don't know, paneer, and you make it all pervasive, you cut it up, you distribute the pieces, then there'll be nothing left. There'll be no solid one block of paneer. So if you take Krishna, Krishna says he's spread everywhere, he's the source of Brahman, he's all pervading, everything is resting on him. So that means he has no form. How is it possible? Because he's everywhere. So normally, what a materialistic man would do would say, yes, that means God is formless. He doesn't have a form. He's everywhere. Further than that, next mantras are explaining to us that he walks and he doesn't walk. So that's a contradiction. So we'll just put it as he doesn't walk, bottom line. So he has no form. He doesn't see, he doesn't eat. You know, it's just like, okay, fine, this is not a person. So yes, the Supreme Absolute Truth is impersonal. So we get lots of people who use texts like the Srimad Bhagavatam or the different Puranas and the Sri Sri Upanishad, and they explain it in an impersonal way, not understanding that Krishna has different shaktis, Krishna has different potencies. Krishna can bewilder any yogi, any jnani, any powerful demigod. Lord Krishna bewildered even Lord Brahma into thinking that this cowherd boy is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I do not believe it. I have some potency too, so I will steal his friends and I'll steal his cows and everything else. So Lord Brahma did that, but Krishna, just to show him, you're just taking my friends. I can expand myself and still act as if nothing's happened. So Krishna did that. He expanded himself not only into the cows and the calves, but also his friends, who were acting just exactly as they normally would. And Lord Brahma was bewildered by this. He couldn't understand what was going on. He would go back to the cave to see if the boys were still there, and then go back and see that they're still playing with Krishna. And this went on for some time. And then Krishna, his forms manifested then into Vishnumurtis, into Vishnu forms. And then he could understand, maybe I'm dealing with not such a normal person. Maybe I'm actually dealing with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although he's holding a flute with a peacock feather on his hair, maybe this is the absolute truth. Because these activities are just too uncanny. These are extraordinary activities. No demigod can perform these activities. So we cannot treat Krishna from hearing all these activities, from hearing Krishna's opulences in the 11th chapter of one of the chapters, even in the 18th chapter, we hear about Krishna's opulences, how, you know, he's the fire of digestion, you know, he's the sun, he's the moon, he's the sacred syllable Om, he's so many different things. So we can get to hear, okay, he's this, he's that, he's this, he's that. Okay, maybe this is a very powerful personality. So we cannot, if we study Shastra, if we study scripture, we cannot treat Krishna like he's a person who's subject to material illusion or faults or shortcomings, because he's not. And Krishna doesn't have to go through the different bodily changes. Krishna appears as he is. Even when he appeared in the womb of Mother Devaki, he came out in a specific way. You know, we don't come out in a forearm form holding a lotus in a club. We're not that pretty when we come out of the mother's womb, but Krishna came out as he is in his pure transcendental form, Satchit Ananda. And that just marveled everyone. It even marveled his parents. He had to transform himself to a normal child's, what seems to be a normal child's body. So Krishna can just do these things. It's easy for him because he is, you know, he's the reservoir of all these potencies. For him, material nature is nothing. He controls the material energy and his spiritual energy as well. Srila Prabhupada explains that being the absolute truth, he is the complete person and he has complete and perfect intelligence to adjust everything by means of his different potencies. So it's not that Krishna has to go and study very hard to try and figure out how am I going to design a material world, and he has to go through an exam and pass the exam to say, okay, fine, this is, he did really well, he knows what he's doing. He has all the equations right, and he has all his resources and all his apparatus, and now he can go and create. Okay, now you have permission, you have the permit and the license to create the material world. Well, Krishna is highly intelligent, and he does not need to be subjected to the laws of karma, nor is he subjected to time, nor is he subjected to the satvikaras or the six bodily changes that happen to matter. Krishna's activities are not like that. He appears as he is, and he is supremely independent. All his activities are independent. The different energies of the Lord are everywhere. Although the Lord and his energies are none different, we shouldn't mistake these energies for the supreme truth. Again, this could be impersonalism. If the Lord is everywhere, then why should I come to the temple to see the Achavigraha? You know, I'm breathing, that's the Lord. The air is the Lord. I'm going to the forest or to the ocean, that's the Lord. Right? But what we're doing is we're running away from the personal truth. We want the impersonal aspect, which will never satisfy the living entity. So although it's one step to understanding that the absolute truth can be all pervasive, yes, he is everywhere, because he has unlimited potencies, he can be everywhere. And he also can be within a form. If he can display himself everywhere, it surely would be easy for him to have one specific form as well. We have a form. We don't like to be impersonal. I don't think anyone here likes just to walk into the temple, not speak to anyone, have prasadam in your little corner by yourself, not having anyone serve you personally. You do it yourself. You chant by yourself, you read by yourself, you dance by yourself. You don't touch anyone. You just by yourself. You don't speak. Everyone is on Monavrata, no talking at all. And you'll see how long we last. Internally we'll be burning. Like, I need to speak to someone. I'm a person. I need to interact. So interaction is there, not only in the minute jiva, also in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The topmost yoga is to understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a person and he has attributes and qualities. And these are gradually revealed as we hear about him. Faith is increased by how much we hear and chant about the Absolute Truth. It will not just manifest automatically. All of a sudden, I'm enlightened. All I do is sit down and look at the deity form and I'll become enlightened instantly. No, we have to hear and chant and perform devotional service. And in the past few days, one of the speakers was speaking about how our devotion or our knowledge and our love for Krishna is reawakened when we serve the pure devotee of the Lord, because the mercy is coming through the pure devotee himself, like Srila Prabhupada, and our Shiksha Guru and our Diksha Gurus. Our advancement is based on their mercy. In one of the texts, I think it's text 16, speaking about how the perfection of life is awarded by the merciful hands of the Lord. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is explaining that when we are still not in our purified state of consciousness, we are not able to perceive the Lord in the heart directly. Sometimes, due to pride, we think that we can actually perceive the Lord directly in the heart, and we can make decisions. Or you hear it sometimes, people say, you know, I'm connected internally with God. I have conversations with God. I can hear Him. He speaks to me. And we base our lives on that, not knowing that our mind fools us. We're thinking we're highly intelligent. We're thinking we have qualifications when we don't. So when we accept a pure devotee, when we accept a direct representative of the Lord Himself, the Bhagavatam explains that if we're at the stage of not being able to perceive the Super Soul within the heart, the Super Soul or Krishna Himself manifests as the spiritual master. And the spiritual master, that is Krishna's mercy. This is prasadam. Yasa prasada bhagavat prasadam. So the spiritual master coming in front of us, in front of our vision, this is Krishna giving His mercy. Okay, now I want you to understand me better. I want you to understand how to serve me better by following my direct representative. This is how your cloud of ignorance can be removed. By yourself, it will not be possible, because due to Kali Yuga, due to association with matter, we are an ocean of faults. We're an ocean of shortcomings. You know, we're illusioned, we make mistakes, we have imperfect senses, we cheat others. With that kind of DNA structure in our consciousness, how can we actually be able to, you know, gradually become highly enlightened beings if you already have that consciousness? That consciousness has to be replaced by another consciousness, a consciousness of an eternal servant of Krishna. So that consciousness has to become replaced by Krishna consciousness. And Krishna consciousness doesn't mean you look like a Krishna conscious person. It doesn't mean you wear dhoti, kurta, chada. It doesn't mean you wear a sari and you have all your tilak signs all over your body. Paka, now you have tilak not only on your forehead but also on your arms. That's nice, that is good, that is advice in the nectar of devotion. You have to put tilak on, you have your neck beads showing, you have your japa. That is good. Externally, that's great. That is purifying for people to actually see a Vaishnava. They actually make advancement by seeing the mark, because it's the mark of Vishnu. You get purification. But also internally, we have to be situated as an aspiring devotee of Krishna. So it means we have to be honest, we have to really take shelter and take guidance of a spiritual master and not just become a servant of Krishna externally from external vision. And there are so many elevated devotees of Krishna. Externally they may have looked like kings or very, very powerful people, they may have looked like Muslims, etc. But internally, they're always meditating on how to serve the Lord selflessly. So it's not only important to externally look like we're on a path of perfection, but we also have to internally create that mood by always hearing and chanting about Krishna under the guidance of an advanced devotee. We're not making advancement by ourselves. It is not possible. If you try and make advancement by yourself, it'll take a very, 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 very long time to get home back to Godhead. Our advancement is based on the waves of the devotee's mercy. So we're actually being carried by the mercy of the devotees. The advancement that we make, if we perform our service nicely, we associate with devotees nicely, we serve them nicely, because the devotee, Krishna is residing in the hearts of his devotee, Krishna becomes pleased. And automatically that devotees also become pleased and enthused by our service attitude, by our character, by our Vaishnava qualities. And then they bestow our blessings, their blessings upon us. They think, oh, this is such a nice devotee, he's doing so well. This is actually how we make advancement, by nicely serving the devotees. That pleases Krishna. Krishna places a lot more emphasis on service to his devotees as being much higher than service to him directly. Because if we have the mentality of I'm going to serve Krishna directly, it means, you know, I'm advanced. I can just go right up, knock on Krishna's door. Because me and Krishna were very close. And then it becomes familiar, we think, yeah, I deserve to just directly, just me and Krishna. I don't need someone who might have even been closer than Krishna to help me get to him. I don't need that. So when Krishna sees that we actually follow his process that he's given, we actually go via the medium of a spiritual master, that shows a humble mood of, you know, I'm not so qualified to access you directly, therefore I'm going to access you through your pure devotee. Even in the topmost realm, sometimes people want to hear about the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, and there even the devotees, they are under the guidance of someone who's serving Radha and Krishna directly. Even within the 8 principal gopis, they head up teams of other gopis who assist in the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So it's not that gopi, you know, Chitradevi feels like, oh, today I'm going to do this, something spontaneous. You know, I'm a ragatmika bhakta or bhaktin, so I'm just going to go for it, I'm going to serve Krishna, I'm going to do this. It's not happening like that in the spiritual world. We're still also, when we get there, we're still under the guidance of our spiritual master. And they're engaging us in how to serve Radha and Krishna. So not at any point are we jumping and saying, oh, now I'm in the spiritual world. It's all spontaneous. And I'm going to go directly to the beautiful jewel throne in a temple of forest flowers in Vrindavan, and I'm going to sit by Radha and Krishna's throne and just have a nice chat with them. It doesn't necessarily happen like that. The mood in Vrindavan is different. It is topmost, I'm a servant of Krishna. So we still have to approach Krishna through his dearmost devotee. And we hear that in different bhajans, in different songs the acharyas have written. People like Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they write songs about, you know, when will that day come when I will get the mercy of Srila Rupa Manjari or this Manjari. They will be able to engage me in the service of Radha and Krishna. This is the proper mood to cultivate. We have to approach a spiritual master to understand and then serve Krishna properly. So we're never ever independent in our activities in Krishna consciousness. We're always depending on the mercy of Krishna and his, specifically Krishna's devotees, to bring us back to his loving embrace. This is how we get to understand the absolute truth. It is revealed through the parampara, it is revealed through the spiritual masters. So, from hearing about Krishna in this chapter, we gradually have to conclude that Krishna is the cause of all causes. He's seated in everyone's heart and he knows our desires, he knows everything, and he will reciprocate. As they surrender, Krishna rewards us accordingly. Krishna will either give us remembrance of him, forgetfulness, or knowledge of him. This is all based on desire. That's the one thing we have. We have these desires. And it's up to these desires will dictate how fast we move towards Krishna or how slow we'll move towards Krishna. Every part and parcel of Krishna is endowed with a particular energy to act according to the Lord's will. And the Shastra is here to warn us what will happen if we deviate from our duties as Krishna's parts and parcels. So if we deviate from our duties as Krishna's parts and parcels, as servants of Krishna, then we'll be in a miserable condition, we'll be cast into ignorance, and our identity will be hijacked from us for some time. We'll have our material identity and our spiritual identity will be taken away from us. So the whole gist, this 12th canto is, although it's not so obviously explaining pure devotional service, it's explaining pure, we have to read in between the lines that in the supreme perfection of life we have to accept Krishna as the cause of all causes, that he is the absolute truth, and not just any incarnation, that Krishna in his Swayam Bhagavan form specifically, that is the original person. Not Lord Narayan or Mahavishnu or any of the Purusha incarnations, but Krishna Swayam Bhagavan, that is the supreme person, that is the original personality. And when we accept that, through hearing and chanting we develop a relationship, and through association with devotees, our faith deepens, we accept a spiritual master, we serve that spiritual master who engages us in the service, we get purification of all the ignorance we've been in since time immemorial. We get a taste for chanting Krishna's glories, we get a taste for hearing about Krishna, a taste for serving Krishna's devotees. By engaging our senses in devotional service, that taste strengthens, and gradually we should get attached to Krishna. We develop a higher taste, and attachment goes to Krishna, and all these other attachments will fall away. And then from that deep attraction, we start developing real love for Krishna, and different intensities of love as well. So I'll stop there and I'll ask if there's any comments or questions.
Why Krishna takes so many forms to establish religion and protect devotees? Why didn't he come as Krishna all the time?
Why doesn't Krishna come as Krishna all the time? Why does he sometimes come as Matsya or Varaha or Lord Buddha? So, because the consciousness of the living entities at a specific time is at a different level. And because Krishna always wants to have fun. So Krishna not only comes to re-establish his principles, but he comes to perform his pastimes to please his devotees. So his devotees can actually see, this is my Lord, look at what he's doing. Now he's Lord Nrisimhadev, this is amazing. And in one aspect he's going to come as Lord Vamana or Lord Kapila, and he's going to teach like this because of specific reasons. So apart from, specifically of course he's coming to annihilate the demonic tendencies, but mainly to give pleasure to his devotees. And at the same time, while he establishes religious principles, he understands that the living entities are his marginal potencies and they have different desires, therefore we have different divisions of faith. So Krishna is reciprocating with those living entities, giving them an authentic or legitimate way to try and gradually get back to him. So Krishna will either send one of his empowered incarnations, one of his partial incarnations. Let's say he'll send Jesus Christ to preach in a certain way, because living entities are, they're at a certain level of consciousness. They can only hear so much about the absolute truth. Simple cowherd men, simple people. If Krishna would have come and said, here's Srimad Bhagavatam, this is the Gayatri Mantra, and the four seed slokas, and your method of enlightenment or self-realization is deity worship, they would have been a bit bewildered and said, what is this? because their consciousness wasn't still evolved enough. So Krishna will give himself in a specific way gradually to elevate their consciousness. And we see Krishna also to show his tattva, to show how he is only the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Through his energies, he shows how he can just expand himself into any form and perform his pastimes. He can come as Lord Boar, a very beautiful boar. Now in Kali Yuga, boars are not particularly beautiful. Right? Boars are not born with golden ornaments, nor do they perform wonderful activities. We know what they do. They're just like digging up somewhere in the sewage, jumping into a pile of this and that. You know, that's what boars do. But Krishna comes as Lord Boar, and what is he doing? He is fighting with someone. He's picking up the earth. He's huge. He grows gradually. He's coming out of someone's nostril. So this is Krishna saying, yeah, this is me, you know. This is what I can do. And for us, it should gradually make us understand, okay, Krishna, indeed, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These are your activities. Unordinary. No one can perform activities like you. So Krishna just comes to show us through his activities that he's the Supreme Person. No one can claim to be God. Absolutely no one. So Krishna, when he incarnates, he gives his message in a different way because our level of consciousness is either not yet evolved. So he's spoon-feeding us a few things. And also to show through his potencies that, yes, I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the all-attractive person. Lord Chaitanya did the same thing. He actually cheated a lot of people because of his effulgence, his pastime with the Mayavadi sannyasis. He just stood there by his meek and humble nature. You know, he didn't come, you know, in his four-armed feature, I am Narayan. No, he was just as his form as Lord Chaitanya, beautiful golden form, and he attracted them. So Krishna shows his potencies, protects his devotees, but ultimately he wants to perform his pastimes for the pleasure of his devotees. And this is a great fun. Krishna is just unlimited. His activities are just unlimited. Any other comment or question? Yes,
so, Jyoti Madhavi, you mentioned about the Purusha incarnations in your talk. So, what is the relation between Purusha incarnations and the Chaturvayu incarnations?
What's the difference between the Purusha incarnations and the... In relation to Prabhu, I'm not qualified to answer that question. That is a highly technical question that requires me to think about the whole day and research. So the Chaturvyuha, Aniruddha, Sankarshan, Pradyumna and Vasudev, these are all expansions coming from Lord Baladev. Whereas the Mahapurusha, Purusha incarnations, they are there in the material world for the purpose of expanding and creation. So you have Mahavishnu who's lying there and he expands himself into every universe, then ultimately into every atom. And this is Krishna's mercy for giving life and activity for the living entities. That is as far as I'll say. If you want more, we can have a look on the Veda base for the technicalities, or we can listen to His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Purna Swami, who has wonderful lectures explaining the Chaturvyuha and their relationship to creation or the Purusha incarnations. Very, very technical. My brain is not able to tap into that at this point.
Srila Prabhupada mentioned in Adivina, chapter 2, that Mahavishnu incarnation is of Sankarshan.
Mahavishnu is an incarnation of Sankarshan. There you go. What's Mahavishnu do? Mahavishnu is lying down and all the he's creating all the universes, so he's sustaining Krishna's activities. Sankarshan is Lord Balaram. So what's Balaram's duty? He's Krishna's paraphernalia. From Sankarshan, everything else is based on Sankarshan. So he's providing everything, all the paraphernalia for Lord Krishna. So in that sense, yeah, you can understand that aspect. Okay. Thank you very much. Grantavat Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Okay, go.